Chapter 13. Money was wanted, and men were wanted, and he had obtained enough of both in 2 years from that day when, pistols in his belt and a cabbage leaf hat on head, he had unexpectedly, and at early dawn, confronted in perfect silence that mysterious Bellerub, who himself was for a moment too astounded for speech at the sight of a white face. The sun had not yet cleared the forests of the interior, but a sky already full of light arched over a dark oval lagoon, over white fields as yet full of shadows, that seemed slowly changing into the whiteness of the morning mist. There were huts, fences, palisades, big houses that, erected on lofty piles, were seen above the tops of clustered fruit trees, as if suspended in the air. Such was the aspect of Bellerup's settlement, when Lingard set his eyes on it for the first time. There were all these things, a great number of faces at the back of the spare, and muffled up figure confronting him, and in the swiftly increasing light a complete stillness, that made the murmur of the word Arhaba welcome, pronounced at last by the chief, perfectly audible to every one of his followers. The bodyguards who stood about him in black skull caps, and with long-shafted lances, preserved an impassive aspect. Across open spaces men could be seen running to the waterside. A group of women standing on a low knoll gazed intently, and nothing of them, but the heads showed above the unstirring stalks of a maize field. Suddenly within a cluster of empty huts nearby the voice of an invisible hag was heard scolding with shrill fury an invisible young girl. Strangers! You want to see the strangers? Oh, devoid of all decency! Must I so lame, and old husk the rice alone? May evil befall thee and the strangers. May they never find favor. May they be pursued with swords. I am old. I am old. There is no good in strangers. Oh girl! May they burn! Welcome, repeated Bellerub, gravely, and looking straight into Lingard's eyes. Lingard spent 6 days, that time in Bellerup's settlement. Of these, three were passed in observing each other without a question, being asked or a hint given, as to the object in view. Lingard lounged on the fine mats with which the chief had furnished a small bamboo house outside a fortified enclosure, where a white flag with a green border fluttered on a high and slender pole, but still below the walls of long, high-roofed buildings, raised 40 feet or more on hardwood posts. Far away the inland forests were tinted a shimmering blue, like the forests of a dream. On the seaward side the belt of great trunks and matted undergrowth came to the western shore of the oval lagoon, and in the pure freshness of the air the groups of brown houses reflected in the water, or seen above the waving green of the fields, the clumps of palm trees, the fenced-in plantations, the groves of fruit trees, made up a picture of sumptuous prosperity. Above the buildings, the men, the women, the still sheet of water and the great plain of crops glistening with dew, stretched the exalted, the miraculous peace of a cloudless sky. And no road seemed to lead into this country of splendor and stillness. One could not believe the unquiet sea was so near, with its gifts and its unending menace. Even during the months of storms, the great clamor rising from the whitened expanse of the shallows dwelt high in the air in a vast murmur, now feeble now stronger, that seemed to swing back and forth on the wind above the earth without anyone being able to tell whence it came. It was like the solemn chant of a waterfall swelling and dying away above the woods, the fields, above the roofs of houses and the heads of men, above the secret peace of that hidden and flourishing settlement of vanquished fanatics, fugitives, and outcasts. Every afternoon Bellerub, followed by an escort that stopped outside the door, entered alone the house of his guest. He gave the salutation, inquired after his health, conversed about insignificant things with an inscrutable mien. But all the time the steadfast gaze of his thoughtful eye seemed to seek the truth within that white face. In the cool of the evening, before the sun had set, they talked together, passing and repassing between the rugged pillars of the grove near the gate of the stockade. The escort away in the oblique sunlight, followed with their eyes the strolling figures appearing and vanishing behind the trees. Many words were pronounced, but nothing was said that would disclose the thoughts of the two men. They clasped hands demonstratively before separating, and the heavy slam of the gate was followed by the triple thud of the wooden bars dropped into iron clamps. On the third night, Lingard was awakened from a light sleep by the sound of whispering outside. A black shadow obscured the stars in the doorway, and a man entering suddenly stood above his couch, while another could be seen squatting a dark lump on the threshold of the hut. "Fear not. I am Belerub," said a cautious voice. "I was not afraid," whispered Lingard. "It is the man coming in the dark, and without warning, who is in danger." "And did you not come to me without warning?" "I said welcome. It was as easy for me to say kill him. " "You were within reach of my arm." "We would have died together," retorted Lingard, quietly. The other clicked his tongue twice, and his indistinct shape seemed to sink halfway through the floor. "It was not written thus, before we were born," he said, sitting cross-legged near the mats, and in a deadened voice. "Therefore you are my guest. Let the talk between us be straight like the shaft of a spear, and shorter than the remainder of this night. What do you want?" "First, your long life," answered Lingard, leaning forward toward the gleam of a pair of eyes, "and then your help." Via the faint murmur of the words spoken on that night lingered for a long time in Lingard's ears, more persistent than the memory of an uproar. He looked with a fixed gaze at the stars burning peacefully in the square of the doorway, while after listening in silence to all he had to say, Belerub, as if seduced by the strength and audacity of the white man, opened his heart without reserve. He talked of his youth surrounded by the fury of fanaticism and war, of battles on the hills, of advances through the forests, of men's unswerving piety, of their unextinguishable hate. Not a single wandering cloud obscured the gentle splendor of the rectangular patch of starlight framed in the opaque blackness of the hut. Belerub murmured on of a succession of reverses, of the ring of disasters narrowing round men's fading hopes and undiminished courage. He whispered of defeat and flight, of the days of despair, of the nights without sleep, of unending pursuit, of the bewildered horror and somber fury, of their women and children killed in the stockade before the besieged sallied forth to die. "I have seen all this, before I was in years a man," he cried, low. His voice vibrated. In the pause that succeeded they heard a light sigh of the sleeping follower who, clasping his legs above his ankles, rested his forehead on his knees. "And there was amongst us," began Belerub again, "one white man who remained to the end, who was faithful with his strength, with his courage, with his wisdom. A great man. He had great riches, but a greater heart. The memory of Jorgensen, emaciated and gray-haired, and trying to borrow $5 to get something to eat for the girl, passed before Lingard suddenly upon the pacific glitter of the stars. He resembled you," pursued Belerub, abruptly. "We escaped with him, and in his ship came here. It was a solitude. The forest came near to the sheet of water, the rank grass waved upon the heads of tall men. Teal, my father, died of weariness. We were only a few, and we all nearly died of trouble and sadness here, on this spot. And no enemies could tell where we had gone. It was the shore of refuge and starvation." He droned on in the night, with rising and falling inflections. He told how his desperate companions wanted to go out and die fighting on the sea against the ships from the west, the ships with high sides and white sails, and how, unflinching and alone, he kept them battling with the thorny bush, with the rank grass, with the soaring and enormous trees. Lingard, leaning on his elbow and staring through the door, recalled the image of the white fields outside, sleeping now, in an immensity of serenity and starlight. This quiet and almost invisible talker had done it all. In him was the origin, the creation, the fate, And in the wonder of that thought, the shadowy murmuring figure acquired a gigantic greatness of significance, as if it had been the embodiment of some natural force, of a force forever masterful and undying. And even now my life is unsafe, as if I were their enemy, said Belarab, mournfully. Eyes do not kill, nor angry words, and curses have no power, else the Dutch would not grow fat living on our land, and I would not be alive tonight. Do you understand? Have you seen the men who fought in the old days? They have not forgotten the times of war. I have given them homes and quiet hearts and full bellies. I alone. And they curse my name in the dark, in each other's ears, because they can never forget. This man, whose talk had been of war and violence, discovered unexpectedly a passionate craving for security and peace. No one would understand him. Some of those who would not understand had died. His white teeth gleamed cruelly in the dark. But there were others he could not kill. The fools. He wanted the land and the people in it to be forgotten, as if they had been swallowed by the sea. But they had neither wisdom nor patience. Could they not wait? They chanted prayers 5 times every day, but they had not the faith. Death comes to all, and to the believers the end of trouble. But you white men who are too strong for us, you also die. You die. And there is a paradise as great as all earth and all heaven together, but not for you, not for you. Lingered, amazed, listened without a sound. The sleeper snored faintly. Belarab continued very calm after this almost involuntary outburst of a consoling belief. He explained that he wanted somebody at his back, somebody strong and whom he could trust, some outside force that would awe the unruly, that would inspire their ignorance with fear, and make his rule secure. He groped in the dark and seizing Lingard's arm above the elbow pressed it with force then let go. And Lingard understood why his temerity had been so successful. Then and there, in return for Lingard's open support, a few guns and a little money, Belarab promised his help for the conquest of Wajo. There was no doubt he could find men who would fight. He could send messages to friends at a distance, and there were also many unquiet spirits in his own district ready for any adventure. He spoke of these men with fierce contempt and an angry tenderness, in mingled accents of envy and disdain. He was wearied by their folly, by their recklessness, by their impatience, and he seemed to resent these, as if they had been gifts, of which he himself had been deprived by the fatality of his wisdom. They would fight. When the time came, Lingard had only to speak, and a sign from him would send them to a vain death, those men who could not wait for an opportunity on this earth or for the eternal revenge of heaven. He ceased, and towered upright in the gloom. Awake, he exclaimed, low, bending over the sleeping man. Their black shapes, passing in turn, eclipsed for 2 successive moments the glitter of the stars, and Lingard, who had not stirred, remained alone. He lay back full length with an arm thrown across his eyes. When 3 days afterward he left Belarab's settlement, it was on the calm morning of unclouded peace. All the boats of the brig came up into the lagoon armed and manned to make more impressive the solemn fact of a concluded alliance. A staring crowd watched his imposing departure in profound silence, and with an increased sense of wonder at the mystery of his apparition. The progress of the boats was smooth and slow while they crossed the wide lagoon. Lingard looked back once. A great stillness had laid its hand over the earth, the sky, and the men. Upon the immobility of landscape and people, Hassam and Amada, standing out clearly by the side of the chief, raised their arms in a last salutation, and the distant gesture appeared sad, futile, lost in space, like a sign of distress made by castaways, in the vain hope of an impossible help. He departed, he returned, he went away again, and each time those 2 figures, lonely on some sandbank of the shallows, made at him the same futile sign of greeting or goodbye. Their arms at each movement seemed to draw closer around his heart the bonds of a protecting affection. He worked prosaically, earning money to pay the cost of the romantic necessity that had invaded his life. and the money ran like water out of his hands. The owner of the New England Voice remitted not a little of it to his people in Baltimore, but import houses in the ports of the Far East had their share. It paid for a fast prow which, commanded by Jaffer, sailed into unfrequented bays and up unexplored rivers, carrying secret messages, important news, generous bribes. A good part of it went to the purchase of the Emma. The Emma was a battered and decrepit old schooner that, in the decline of her existence, had been much ill-used by a paunchy white trader of cunning and gluttonous aspect. This man boasted outrageously afterward of the good price he had got, or that rotten old hooker of mine you know. The Emma left port mysteriously in company with the brig, and henceforth vanished from the seas forever. Lingered at her towed up the creek, and ran her aground upon that shore of the lagoon farthest from Bellerup's settlement. There had been at that time a great rise of waters, which retiring soon after left the old craft cradled in the mud, with her bows grounded high between the trunks of two big trees, and leaning over a little, as though after a hard life as he had settled wearily to an everlasting rest. There, a few months later, Jorgensen found her when, called back into the life of men, he reappeared, together with Lingard, in the land of refuge. "She is better than a fort on shore," said Lingard, as side by side they leant over the taffrail, looking across the lagoon on the houses and palm groves of the settlement. "All the guns and powder I have got together so far are stored in her. Good idea, wasn't it? There will be, perhaps, no other such flood for years, and now they can't come alongside, unless right under the counter, and only one boat at a time. I think you are perfectly safe here. You could keep off a whole fleet of boats. She isn't easy to set fire to. The forest in front is better than a wall." "Well?" Jorgensen assented in grunts. He looked at the desolate emptiness of the decks, at the stripped spars, at the dead body of the dismantled little vessel that would know the life of the seas no more. The gloom of the forest fell on her, mournful like a winding sheet. The bushes of the bank tapped their twigs on the bluff of her bows, and a pendant spike of tiny brown blossoms swung to and fro over the ruins of her windlass. Hassam's companions garrisoned the old hulk, and Jorgensen left. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.